that's my life. Oh, and I sing this song about back in the good days.
How? Welcome back to another edition of Farm Talk, the show currently known as Farm Talk. I'm Cody Lee, joined with my good buddy here, Casey Pascura.
What up, everybody? How's the gardens going?
Well, it's officially hot, huh?
I was a little toasty before coming in, that's for sure.
In the 90s, you think, today?
Definitely, humid and hot at the farm, but we're hanging in there. Plants are as well.
Yeah, it looks like typical days, like 93 degrees or something is what I've been seeing. It's pretty warm. Rivers are dropping fast. It sure is the best time to get into them as well. Have you been getting into the rivers, Casey?
Oh, as much as possible. Trying to like get a lot done in the morning and cool my body down and then working later in the day.
So Casey, I'm sure most of y'all know, is up there at Sunfire Ranch, the leader of Seed Peace. And how's the Thompson Creek flowing, speaking of?
You know, it's flowing pretty good. I mean, this time of year, as much of our side creeks show, is that there's, appropriation of the water is at its height. So it drops down. But we have good flow for this time of year. Absolutely. And overall, although hot, I feel like our little valley's kind of creating oasis compared to a lot of places.
You're on that Sweet Jessup ditch as well?
Just the Pioneer off of Thompson Creek. But at one time the Sweet Jessup also provided water to the ranch, and maybe one day it will again. But I mean, I think current event out there that I thought we'd talk about a little bit is just insect pressure, in particular the onslaught of
grasshoppers. I don't know if you caught it, Casey, but there was a local news, Rocky Mountain Community Radio news story about how there's kind of like a big hatch or whatever, especially of grasshoppers this year. And they said they were in northern Colorado, maybe around Steamboat, and just saying that it was kind of an unusually warm spring and then like about as hot of a June on record, and that it was like the perfect conditions for a lot of grasshoppers.
Yeah, I have some friends over in Eckerd all around the North Fork, and it's just at a level of, and they're trying to prescribe what to do, with these high populations. There's a thought, well, mow everything down and then they won't have less to eat, but then they're eating your crop. And
yeah, okay, so that is really interesting, because I always say just plant more, put more good into everything, more good bacteria or fungi or plants, and so my garden is wild. It has all the weeds, lots of weeds, and I'm walking around seeing a lot of grasshoppers as well. I like to try to just for fun to try to snatch them up and throw them to my chickens too. But I wouldn't say that it looks any worse than any other year I've noticed, but I just started noticing like yesterday and this morning. And I would just go with have more vegetation for them to deal with, so they're not like you mow everything down and then they're going to go right for your corn plants or whatever,
Yeah, I was questioning that strategy myself, but the more I'm learning, I've been really studying a lot on plant immunity, and it's difficult because plant immunity is focused, has a lot to do with the place and the context with a lot of things that we don't have the ability to change, like how hot it is, or sometimes the source of fertility that you're getting, or things. And on, you know, on a professional level, what we're starting to learn is that through utilizing sap analysis, which is basically a blood test for plants that you have to, that you can get done, not in the United States yet, but will be coming soon.
Can you direct listeners to some resources on that?
Yeah, check out the Regenerative Agricultural Podcast by John Kemp. But what I'm getting at is basically, if you can use foliar nutritional sprays addressing all these micro and macronutrient problems that are arising from the complexities of our environment, you can get the plants to a level of health that can be immune even to those high order insects, which, like, the hardest ones to get immunity to are the grasshoppers, cicadas. But I've heard stories from John Kemp and team that through foliar nutritional management, meaning like spraying on nutrients derived from things like kelp, plants, crustacean meals, these types of things, you can get the plants to a where they create a high fat lipid content.
Wow.
It's when you see plants that have like that shiny green, and that can be create immunity.
Of course, that makes sense. And then I think of like weak plants as attracting disease, or, you know, a stressed out tomato or potato is going to get the beetles. Mm-hmm. But then I think, like, wouldn't a grasshopper like a really healthy, nutritious plant?
Yeah, I mean, that's how conventional wisdom would think of it. Uh-huh. But, you know, I guess through evolution, the insects were put on the earth to start the decomposition process of the weak plants in nature.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it happens.
It all just balances, yeah. Yeah. So we don't have to look at it as a problem. It's just like we go through these cycles. And what you're saying I'm getting is like just resiliency, like planning for making the soil and the plants more resilient.
Yeah, and I think, you know, as the sophistication goes for people in this professionally, and we understand that the cold temperatures cause the plants to not absorb this nutrition, we can be doing a weekly or biweekly foliar program. And what happens is the plants, and you want to spray your plants in the evening ideally. So if you were to create a ferment, you'd want to spray them in the evening. And the reason being that it stays liquid on the leaves the longest.
Oh, yeah.
And so, you know, when I put a tomato in the ground in April and the ground's cold, the irrigation water's cold, even if I had plants robustly growing before I put them in, those plants are cool season adapted plants that are exuding root exudates at those cold temperatures. As soon as I put my tomato in, it cannot exude those root exudates, and thus it's starving the environment, starving the biology. And so ultimately what we're understanding is that's when we should be putting on these foliars, which then start to put root exudates out when the plant wouldn't be able to naturally because of the dynamics of our environment. Thus then start feeding and creating the biology to work later. And I'm realizing I've been making the same mistake it's just the context that we are dealing with is just, you know, a tough environment. And so to get ahead of that, we're going to start, you know, it's like transplant, start a foliar program, and hopefully we'll start to see a lot better and earlier and production.
So what are you suggesting the time to apply these solutions, like to your tomatoes in April?
What I'm suggesting is when people are, you know, it's we've all kind of, at least I've experienced it, I want to put a tomato in early because I don't want to deal with that big plant in my nursery or in your window or whatever. And then it just sits there. It's like it's not even growing. And literally it isn't. And then it's not feeding the biology.
Yeah.
And so that's where it's like, yes, we could put it in, but then we take these plants that are making the biology, the nettles, the, you know, all the comfreys, all the things that are growing around you, ferment them and spray those on that plant, which then gives it the ability to feed.
And they are in, the comfreys and the nettles are in their prime in the pretty early in the season. You know, they're already kind of petering out right now.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, my mind's being blown, but I think it's really just like, how can we do the job best? And in reality, this is not the easiest place to grow, but the more we know, the better we can create healthy environments and healthy food.
What's one of your favorite crops that's really happening right now?
We're getting the first cauliflowers coming in, and we've kind of struggled with cabbage moth. And through nutrient management, like I'm explaining, we've been getting immunity there. So,
oh, sweet.
That's been really exciting. Carrots continue to just amaze us and are great. And, you know, it's a little bit of everything. The first pea seeds are drying down that we grew. So that's right on kind of time. And
yeah,
all the flowering plants, the onions are mating with one another. and there's just a lot of fun things going, but it's also where, you know, the weeds are getting ready to go to the seed and all the things.
Ooh,
that
yeah,
chase you. And it makes you dig deep this time of year.
Is the garlic harvest on the horizon?
Yeah, I'd say 2 weeks, a week to 2 weeks.
Same, yeah. I don't know if the moon was full last night. I haven't looked at a calendar. It looked like it was.
Yeah. And so, pretty chilly considering how hot the days have been. It was chilly last night.
I figured harvest that garlic from before the new moon the next couple weeks, yeah. They're showing the signs, getting brown on the tips and falling over and everything. So, yeah.
It's exciting.
It is. It's really, oh God, I love garlic. Well, I'm chatting here with Casey Pascura of Seed Peace up at the Sunfire Ranch and the Farm Collaborative. And we are joined with a very special guest who I bumped into the other day in town. And he grew up here in Carbondale, and so he has, you know, a great perspective, I think, of seeing how the town has changed. And this young man is no stranger to KD&K or the Carbondale, the Roaring Fork Valley community and beyond. And we are pleased to have Xavier Razor with us. What's up?
What's up? Hello.
How are you doing today, Xavier?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you, Cody?
Excellent, man. It's really good to catch up again. I understand you've been up in Washington State for a little bit.
Yeah, I was at Washington State. I was actually working at some food co-ops out there and talking to some farmers and whatnot.
And, very cool.
Yeah.
What part of Washington?
I was up by Bellingham, and then I moved down to Port Townsend.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it sounds like really, really good farming communities, huh?
Yeah, I'm trying to think. Uprising Seed,
yeah,
is
like,
up there.
Yeah, yeah. Like Olympic Peninsula, there's like a lot of local farms and like little like communes of people just growing food and whatnot.
Great conditions for growing food and seed up there.
I bet. And I first got to know you, Xavier, probably when you were just like a little boy running around barefooted downtown, when thank goodness we had a Carbondale community food co-op for, I don't know, at least eight to 10 years. That was right in the central of downtown, across from Pepino's. A lot of you may remember it, and that the elm tree is still out front where people used to sit out in the shade and have ice cream or something in the summer. Unfortunately, we don't have that anymore. Hopefully someday we'll, we do have a little health food store off of 133. Big shout out to Mana Foods. But yeah, when we bumped into each other, you know, in your young life, like as a, you know, a teenager or young man, got to see that whole field out by 133 just developed into a giant parking lot and the biggest grocery chain in the world, the City Market.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy just because working at these co-ops I was working at, they were actually the size of City Market. They were huge co-ops with, they were getting all sorts of farm from up in Canada because we were up in Bellingham. Like, we were getting garlic from there. We were getting a lot of Oregon beef. We were getting all sorts of food from there. And it made me realize, because I had previous experience because I went to the co-op like every day, of what our local food systems are changing. And I'm pretty involved, not super involved, not like you, Casey. I'm not growing anything right now, don't have any land. But I been working at restaurants and just with local food, and I started to see kind of a shift. And me and my girlfriend, who actually went to film school, are trying to make a documentary about the local film, local food systems in Carbondale.
Oh, and specifically in Carbondale in our area, huh?
Yes, yeah. That's what it's mostly going to be centralized about. It's going to have some other places. I'm going to try to interview farmers from local areas and elsewhere, but it's just kind of crazy because it's the one thing we really need to have a community is food, and our main source of food right now is a giant conglomerate that is trying to have a merger with another giant conglomerate.
Yeah, it's interesting. And even that giant store has very little organic produce, I've noticed. Like, a lot of like just non-food that I don't think that would be fit for human consumption.
One thing that I learned that really shocked me, I went to agricultural bio in school, taught at Roaring Fork, is a lot of the food that you see in supermarkets that is labeled organic, it is technically organic because it's not used like really harsh pesticides, but it's still grown in things like plastic. You're still getting PFAS, you're still getting microplastics from that. Or it will have plant-derived herbicides and insecticides, but I've worked with those. I've done a little work with the Aspen Tree Service and a bunch of other really cool places, and a lot of these herbicides that are better for the environment and better for people are still not fit for consumption. Like, one of the main chemicals that we were using, which is plant derived, if you got it on your skin, you'd have to go to the hospital within like an hour or two, you know, and that's something we are putting on our food. So
that's wild.
Do you remember what that one was called?
I think it was called orthene.
Okay.
It looks like rice and you mix it with water.
Yeah. Xavier, when you think about the story to be told about local food, what are you looking to enlighten people about?
So I really just want to show people, kind of try to get the most non-biased experience, because we're all humans, you know, even the people that developed that parking lot had, you know, motives and whatnot. And I really just want to get people to see that when it comes to something like food, and especially in a local community that was built on providing local food. You know, we're called Carbondale because we're a dale rich in carbon, you know? And I really want to just try to give people the view on what their food comes from and the farmers and what we can do to get better local food. Because a lot of local food can be pretty expensive sometimes, I feel. But when, you know, we have places like the farmers market and we have places like Mana Foods and other, you know, co-ops around that actually provide local food for pretty, you know, you can get it for pretty inexpensive. And I just really want to try to give people more of awareness so we can try to push for getting people, especially people in lower incomes, more good local food.
Of course, in Carbondale and the Roaring Fork Valley, we have this sort of huge industry of like outdoor tourism and sports, you know, climbing and mountain biking and rafting and fishing. And I wonder if, and especially for you, Casey, like, I wonder if it's not too late to, you know, kind of pull together the land, the arable land that we have left, and our resources and our creativity to kind of have more like agritourism, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think the root of, you know, to have more food, you need more farmers. And it's one of the hardest professions that exist. It's really hard to find equity in it, meaning like it's not, you know, a lot of times you don't, the modern farmer, the young farmer doesn't own their land, they're leasing their land. You know, the more expensive this area gets, the more difficult it is to get in, because you got to rent a home, or you have to, all the layers of things, you know. And the reality is, it's hard to pay off all those bills with vegetables. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so I think, you know, I would encourage you, Xavier, like, tell the story of the difficulty of the farmer.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think, you know, it's, it takes some grit, and it takes a lot of ingenuity, and it takes a lot of expertise for not a lot of compensation. But if you can get a collective of people that care about the profession being protected, the food supply increasing, then you can start to get to the root of these issues, and then start creating the conducive environments that make people want to get into it, can sustain themselves in the profession. And, you know, I think in reality, we're getting a better understanding of how, the how, you know, as like I was speaking earlier about plant lipids getting high enough to create, you know, insect immunity. I mean, I've been listening to as much as I could possibly listen to on what's the latest agronomic practices around organics. And every week I'm learning more and more on, ultimately, like, we're understanding how to replace our current destructive agricultural system with this new system. But it's not easy.
Mm-hmm.
And the heavy, you know, the hand of industry is putting its hand on and lobbying and all that on the scale of not changing. But the farmers, you know, in this country carry, I think it's like $48 billion worth of debt is or something.
Wow.
So it's hard to get out from under that without, you know, community awareness and people getting involved outside of just buying the produce.
Mm-hmm. And that's what I really want to bring, is community awareness to the farmers. Like you said, my parents, they're not farmers, but they're horse ranchers. And I can see that, you know, taking care of livestock or taking care of plants, it's a lot of work, you know. And these options that we do have to use, you know, like I was talking about chemicals, is, this is what I really want to show in the documentaries. It's not just black and white, because you have a large amount of debt to place. You have a large amount of people to feed, and you have things like grasshoppers coming, you have things like weeds coming, you have a bunch of crazy stuff that is adding to that. And so you're like, oh yeah, here's a quick solution. And I feel like I really want to try to tell more people's story, like you, who are actually working really hard to try to provide food and try to provide seeds, which is super important, because a lot of private firms own seeds, you know, as you know, and whatnot. And so if we can just get more community awareness, so more people can start growing their food, you know, and then we can actually start to have more of a dispersed view on our produce and on our food, we can actually give ourselves tips. Because, you know, if more people are doing it, we're getting more knowledge and getting better practices for organics.
Yeah, and perhaps we really need to inspire our municipalities and the landowners that, you know, this is what we need to do. This is the most important thing we need to do for the survival of our species.
Yeah, and it's all intertwined, you know, like good decision making on the land, it affects the climate, it sequesters carbon, it creates healthy people. So it really is so intertwined, these things. And you know, I'm really just wishing you a lot of luck in your endeavors. Xavier, I don't know. Did you see the film How We Grow?
Yeah, I watched that. It's really inspiring.
Because it's like, it's time for How We Grow 2.0. Because a lot's happened in almost 10 years since that film. Was it 6 or 7 years ago since that film was actually put on? So I think I'm happy to, you know, join with you in trying to tell this story.
Xavier, and I don't want to put your partner Raven on the spot here. I understand she's has some background in film. Do you have a sort of timeline of how long you'll be working on this and when we expect to see a little bit of a teaser of it?
Yeah, so we are going, this is kind of the first step. I have an outline written. I am getting a list of names. And so my plan is to work on, get all the filming done while I'm here in Carbondale for the next few months. And then around November, October is when we're going to really start editing. And then should have a finished product to show everyone by the spring, we think.
That is awesome, man. I really look forward to it. Thank you so much for coming back to the KD&K studio today.
Thank you for having me.
Very Xavier Razor, he's a legacy here at the station. Casey, we wish you well and all that hard work you're doing out in the summer heat.
It's my pleasure. Happy gardening, folks.
And we'll catch y'all next time on the fourth Monday of the month. Next August. Stay tuned for My Own Two Hands.
We'll gather round when that old guitar starts to make that sound. A lot of good things went down, down, down. Back in the good days, we's in love with the people that we have.